One, two, three. It's about accurate.
Too many fingers.
Like this hat you've got on. You wore this last time too. What is this?
Ooh. Chili.
Oh, it's chili. I can never tell if it's the adult or the kid.
Nah, it's mom. Mom!
They're so close together. You have to like see them side by side, or I do.
Yeah, my toddler keeps pointing at it and going, Mom!
Mom! Yeah, from the intro.
Yeah, yeah. Mom! We went and saw the Bluey stage show recently. Picked up some merch. It was very good.
I won't tell my kid.
Yep, that was good.
Was that in Melbourne?
No, it was local-ish. Touring.
Wow.
Touring show.
That's crazy. It's like a Hamilton for kids.
Pretty much. Yeah. But they're making as much money as Hamilton.
I can't imagine. Mm-hmm. Disney's got to get their money.
Hey. What's up?
I've been machining.
So I see.
Using a CNC.
A mill.
Some steel.
No less.
Cut a whole, not just like some tiny project for some students. That was the only other time I cut steel. It was like some 2.5-inch discs.
Yeah, right. Wow. So this is new for you.
Oh, yeah. That's why it took me like, I don't know. I feel old and slow when I have to do stuff like this anymore, where it's like, the cost of the machine, you know, the value of the machine and the opportunity of messing up. I just get really, really precautious. And like I had the fixture designed for it and I had machined the bottom side when we had talked last time. And I was just like basically ready to program and cut the top side, which is like the important part, obviously. Mm. And then I go, oh, I've got this 4140 I bought in last July. And I need to cut it down to the size of the stock I need because it was like 12 by 12 and I needed it like...
It's huge, yeah.
closer to seven inches. And like, it's just hard to buy. It doesn't come in the same kind of like increments that you can get it, you know, or at least I haven't found it. And so I was like, how in the hell am I going to do this? All right, as I'm finishing the fixture design, I was like, well, I got to figure that out first. So I figured that out by... We are really close to a water jet cutter. And I had never used them before. Oh. And they like basically did it in like an hour for me for like a great deal. And we met them and chatted and should have met a long time ago. It was a good experience. They cut it, you know, 7 minutes to cut the part out or the stock out. And then I was like, all right, got that done. And I basically like through programming the rest of it, figured out I had some more issues and fixed those issues. And then long story short, I finally cut the top and it took like over an hour to do op one of this prototype project. And so I still have op two, but otherwise have a steel version of this thing that I've been dreaming of for a while.
So the side-by-side photo you sent me, that's like steel on the left, alley on the right. Is that right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
I just, when you sent me the photo of the machine part and I realized it was steel, all I could hear in my head was like, my multicam like trying to chug through steel with like dry cutters. Just
have you tried it? You tried it before?
Yuck.
It I've got way too, one of my lessons in, I have like, let's say four different tools. Three are in the machine already from that last job. I had a roughing tool in 3/8 and a finishing tool in 3/8 and a 1/4-inch tool that I just have one of. And then I added an 1/8-inch tool. And the roughing tool, I basically kind of like mirrored or copied the lengths and the sizes of my aluminum tools. Just because I was like, well, this worked good. Let's just do it again. And the right, you know, more flutes, different geometry. And it is, the roughing tool is just way too long. It is like an inch and a quarter or inch and a half, you know, flute length. And it just hated it. It made the worst noises, you know, like roughing. And it's just obvious that the rigidity matters so much more in steel. So when I get it, I ordered a shorter one. It worked, but
yeah,
you know, also just insane. Like I rough, you know, a high efficiency machining kind of 3/8 with that chip breaking rough rare use like 200 some inches a minute in aluminum, going like 40 inches a minute in steel. And it just sounds like the worst noise. Like nothing a router can produce is close to making a bad steel cut part. You know, like when the, you know, I haven't optimized anything, so it just sounds bad.
Yeah. It's a prototype.
But satisfying to cut it.
You need to flip it now and cut the guts out of it on the backside.
Yeah. It's less, there's less on that side to take out. Luckily, it's pretty flat. A few tools I've crossed over. I've used the chamfer tool. I decided to not try my engraving tool because it's like a 20 thou ball end mill that lasts for like a year of aluminum engraving. And I was like, am I just going to blow it up immediately? Like,
yeah,
I don't, I'm just not going to try that right now. The drills did really well. Same drills, just way slower speed. But for the most part, yeah, just using a couple tools and really slow and conservative. So
yeah, sick.
Yeah, super well heavy done. In comparison.
Yeah,
it's obvious. Yeah, all things that people that cut these materials are like, duh. But us dead log good. Lovers.
Yeah. Well done. Well done. Feels like a milestone.
Yeah.
Cool, man.
I tried to show my. Everyone, you know, I'll get home and show my son. I'll be like, you know, I ask him what he did. And, oh, I played with friends. You know, it's like a daycare. Mm. I'm like, he's like, what? Sometimes he asks me. He'll ask me. Impressive. He's like, you see Wiki? And he says Ricky, what? Like Worky.
Wiki.
He knows Ricky. But it's like Ricky at work. He like combines the two into like, you see Worky? And so I was like, well, here I made this. And he loves to see photos on her phone. So I showed him and he just looked at it and he goes, what did he say? I don't see. Oh, he wanted to see photos of himself. And he was like, I don't see my name. And I was like, you're not at my shop. What do you mean? Just no care at all to your shiny metal.
Yep.
How are you?
I am okay. Yeah, I don't know. Just feeling the weight of the world a bit more this week than usual. Yeah.
Yeah, I know that.
Probably just as a result of absorbing too much news and so-called reality via social media. Just feeling a bit crapola, which, you know, is always, what do I say? Laura texted me the other day. She asked how's going or something. I was like, blur, you know, responded fairly negatively. And she was like, oh yeah, how's sales? I'm like, yeah. Just like
she
that.
She just said, well, I know how sales are.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. Just, still feel like trying to find what normal is off the back of commission days and settling into sort of a rhythm with quotes and stuff again, and don't know. So a big win this week has been finally, it's been a while, finally finalizing the WorkSafe stuff for our shop. So all that's closed out and we've got our approvals on everything. The final bit of that was the pallet racking, getting that signed off this week. I was here the other night because I leave everything to the last minute. It's just my default mode, and I knew I had a bit more pallet racking stuff to do before it was inspected and signed off. And I had like a bunch more like holes to drill in the concrete and more like Dynabot, like concrete anchors to put in because we had to add bolts to foot plates and stuff.
Yep.
And I'd done maybe another 20 or so holes that night. I was on the last, literally on the last hole for the night. It was almost midnight. And I reach under like the racking in this like real dusty spot, which no one ever goes. And I pull my hand out and there's a bloody redback spider in my hand, which is like one of our most venomous, word, but one of our most dangerous spiders.
That looks nice. Nice red stripe on it.
Yeah, it was fun. Didn't bite me, thankfully.
Also known to the Americans, this maybe makes some sense, the Australian Black Widow.
Oh, yeah.
That's kind of one of our venomous ones.
Yep.
What happens if you get that? How bad is it?
I think it's pretty bad. I don't really know. How poisonous is it? It's pretty poisonous. It has caused death, but I don't think that's the default. I think you have to get hit pretty hard for it to kill you. But anyway,
you didn't get this. Often it first squirts its victim with what resembles super glue from its spinnerets, immobilizing the prey by sticking the victim's limbs and appendages to its own body.
Yeah, give me
Australia just find me in the morning. I'm just
wrapped up in spider web.
Well, you also have those spiders that look like they're from, like, I don't know what they're called. They look like they're small dog sized.
Oh, yeah. It's just here. Sleeping on his mat.
This is my pet.
Yeah.
Mr. Fang.
Mr. Fang.
Large spiders in Australia. Huntsman.
That WorkSafe stuff's been a fair bit of work in the end. It feels good to have got that done and out. And
yeah.
I can do some other things now.
Freeze the brain.
Yeah. The next big sort of project in that theme really is to give the robots a proper home. I've just got to do it. And like, okay, whether I cage them in or laser them in or like, you know, I got away with it this time around because they were in training. But like, if we have another visit.
Right. Next time.
Next time. And you really need. Yeah, and for our own safety as well. Like, I need to get that stuff sorted. So I don't know whether to put them in a cage or whether to go down the laser route. I don't know. Lasers are expensive.
My first thought was,
it's all expensive.
What does Shelly make? Shelly make,
I know, right?
Shelly make laser fences?
I've done a bunch of research into kind of, the DIY hacky version of that. It's like,
it's just ropes.
Proximities, yeah. That was just a rope. Just unhook it.
Those like those stretchy things at like airports. Don't go past this stretchy wire.
Yeah.
That sounds challenging.
Because I was, I've become obviously much more comfortable with them. You know, I trust my programming. Because they're so dumb. Once you've programmed something, it's a very predictable path. I've never seen them do anything unpredictable once they're running in automatic mode, just doing simple operation. But they seem like, they seem like very trustworthy beasts, and I can sort of walk past them as they're operating and blah, blah, blah. And I've also seen how they error out when they hit something they're not expecting. Like, they do have like torque sensitivity, and they're like, oh, I hit something, stop.
Right. So what's the costly part of is it like another control box that gets costly, or can they just have an IO that goes into them that's like, you break this laser line from automationdirect.com that's $1,000 worth of laser sensors and then they stop? Yeah. Or do you need like a special control box that gets added on that's $10,000?
No, I think it's just digital input, I believe. They've got a separate set of inputs just for the safety stuff, which is double relayed or something. I don't know. Need to do more research.
Secret relay.
Double secret.
Yeah.
Special. I think that's all integrated. I just need to, if I was going to go down that route, what sensors I was going to use, and then feed them into the right input as the stop signal. Yeah, bit of rethinking, design work to do there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, rethink the cell design as part of that in terms of where I want to be picking things up and loading. Because if we're going to be enclosed and we can't get in and out of there easily, where do you feed the stock in, or where do you give it the pile of parts, and kind of rethink all of that as well.
Giant pencil sharpener holder, big pencil box. Crayola.
Yeah, cute. I like it. That's kind of where my brain's at.
Right.
Sales at your end.
Great last week. The first time we almost hit our target.
Cool.
Since the sale in May. Which feels insane. And the target's kind of aggressive. It's like a, you know, it's the ideal. Like there's an, I have a, you know, a kind of a break even number I track, and then almost double, not quite double that amount is what the target number is. Kind of where, if we just make money, like the whole premise of this is only basing our revenue based on product sales on Shopify. So it's, that's the target number is like the dream, not the dream number, but just like where we'd like to be. But we basically hit that last week, which was great. And then this week we're half of it, you know, with a day, a day and a half left. So all over the place, really. But we are out of stock of a couple things. We ran out of our top selling tool holder. And we're waiting on TorqueWrench adapters that did ship from Taiwan. So those things being in stock, even though we backorder stuff, I think it just kills sales in general. I got a pretty complicated project upcoming to kind of build in my Rake application to replace a few like backorder, pre-order monitoring and like whether it allows people to buy and then what they see when they actually order that thing. Because we keep having this more complicated situations where people use like at the cart, we have like, they're called upsell apps, but they're basically like, you know, people also add these items. And so they'll do that, which is amazing. They're like, oh yeah, I did. I didn't know you had this whatever tool holder, and they'll add two or three or something. And then they'll be out of stock because they don't show out of stock there, you know, like they're backordered.
Yeah. Yep.
And then they get no notification in the cart. And so that we have to like monitor that to make sure that they're not like, why didn't I get this thing? So we have good sales mechanisms, but the experience and tracking is lots to be desired still. Getting that figured out in the next, I don't know, month or so, hopefully.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, do you find those like cart add-on things effective?
Yeah, I do. I mean, you have, I think you have versions of it. We do two main things. One is like, for example, the Dust Boot. Like there's a bunch of accessory type things or things that people buy. They'll find us. People want to buy a Dust Boot from us. They'll find us for that reason, advertising or Facebook group or something. And then there's all these other ancillary things to it. It's like the Duck Tower is pretty often added to that situation, whether they buy it in a month or when they purchase the Dust Boot. Like obviously we just like to sell it at the same time. So right underneath when you're adding that stuff to the cart on the product page, it says Dust Boot, spacers, brush, you know, ISO 30 tool holders. And people will add two or three of those things right there as they're buying their Dust Boot. And they don't have to like go to that product page and do all that research. It's basically like the, you know, all the cash wrap stuff in a store, right? It's like, oh yeah, I do want some Skittles, you know. That's how I think about it. And then the other version of that is when you're in the cart page at the top, there's a little row that's like people also buy this stuff, and it like is a dynamic upsell. So it'd be like if you add a tool tag tower and you're on the cart page, it'll be like, would you like the tags for that? You know, if you didn't happen to add them. So their stats, they tell you whether they converted or not, and it's effective. So it's worth the sale for sure. It's just figuring out the after logistical hurdles of like when stuff's out of stock or not. And anyway.
Yeah. Cool. It's not something I've ever managed to sort of tackle, but I think, seeing you do it over the years has made me think that I should be doing stuff like that, but I've never quite worked out what it would look like for us in terms of, I mean, something like Threadboard, like where you're buying a panel and it prompts you to add the bags would be the most simplest example. It's the simplest example.
Right.
That would make sense for us.
Yep. So a lot of those on the product page versions, I'm very selective about what gets put on those pages. And sometimes it's just like for pedestals, right? It's like you get to pick one of three types of Z probe stand as an add-on, but really it's like you kind of need it. You basically need this product. But like some people that want to buy pedestals for a non-chop saber don't need that. So I can't make it required to pick it. But then the others, it's like, if it's an ER32 tagged product, it'll show one of four things automatically and they get to choose whether they want to add it or not. It's like a little more dynamic. So It's pretty effective. I've talked about them here and shown you some of the results of it over time. I think it's one of those things where you can't predict necessarily how well it's going to work. And, you know, we always talk about this here too. It's like, we're not our own customer too. So it's like, it's hard to predict what people are going to want.
I know. And
sometimes the random stuff works, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I've been building a new landing page this week, trying to flesh out, because we've just never had a centralized spot on the website for crates, for our clip crates. And like, we've just always had the generic Shopify collection and then the product pages themselves, and never any sort of explanatory central spot about like what the product is and why it exists and blah, blah, blah.
I'm supposed to say SHA. Damn, autocorrect. Sorry.
Justin texting me. We're texting each other while we're talking. It's a good look.
I like writing secret notes while we're writing.
Just telling
nobody will know what we're saying.
Missing things on his website.
Yeah. I should be doing the same to you, just to distract you too.
Yeah.
What can I find? Keep going.
But I would, like, whenever, like, I had a customer text me at like 7 p.m. last night. I was like putting out the compost or something about just a very specific dimensional question about a product. If these are the kind of things I need to be writing these moments down and putting them in on the bloody landing page, like on the product, in the product information pages. Like, if a customer has to ask me this, this is such a simple thing that it's obviously missing
it's
from the product
miss,
information.
Though.
I know, but I always have that impulse when they come in, the question of like, oh, I should remember this and record it and then answer the question for everybody on the website. And I very rarely actually get around to circling back and doing that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, yeah, if I could get into a better habit with that of actually answering people's questions. I mean, it's the same with, like, I think that's a great fodder for making content as well. It's just answering a question for everybody, which I've had a sort of hit and miss history of trying to do that, but
it must work. I am still absolutely flabbergasted at your not paying for advertising and the amount of organic traffic you get. It's just like insane. So obviously whatever content, or I mean, I would not try a website migration right now, let me tell you, because it's working. All of your incoming traffic is so effective at creating sales for you that you question maybe those things, but I think it is working. Like, whatever.
Yeah, sure.
Traffic. Oh, this makes me think of, there's this big new thing with Google Search Console, which I've been monitoring every day, you know, making sure we're trending towards the right things with the migration numbers. And they've added, Google now has an option. You can add your Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube as something you can track via search, their search tools, which is really interesting because I don't have that much data yet. Like, I have 5 days of Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube, but like, it's showing me specific posts. I'll show you specific posts and how many clicks they get, and like, what are the queries leading to that content. And it's like, no way you could ever have known before that a post about returns on Instagram was leading to sales or clicks to your website, right? Like,
right, okay.
It just happened.
Okay, so you can connect your Google Search Console to those social accounts to see the links. Yeah, okay.
Right, so like, here's my, like, the YouTube is by far my most effective, or...
Makes sense.
What they're saying is the most effective, and then it's interesting to see like the specific video and how many clicks that's getting. And
yeah. 7 surprising secrets for flawless CNC plywood.
I had a comment recently on that video that was like, none of those were surprising. Those are all obvious. And I was like, I think I wrote like congrats or something like that. great, but you clicked, didn't you? And you watched it.
Shanks.
I was going to say, kind of maybe unrelated. I was just thinking Ricky's done a lot of good work, and it took us, I don't know, a month, 6 weeks of thinking and figuring out what we liked best. But I remember I brought up, like, I asked here, how do you better organize kits or bombs, right? Like an assembly set of products. I'm saying this right. All the different pieces you need to assemble a product, or that could be related to a product. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know, we have all these separate bins that are labeled, but it's like hunting for the right thing. And it seems so obvious now, and we'll probably change it, but we basically bought bigger bins instead of smaller bins. And we're like subdividing inside them with, like, mostly is done Gridfinity bins that are different heights. So they kind of like stair step back in height. So like the front are all kind of things you need. Well, they're all things you need. And then there's cold storage all other places. So it's like, to do dust boots now, it's like one big thing you can take down and move to where you're assembling, rather than like six things.
Rather than moving your workstation to that zone, you'd bring all the bits to you. Right. Is it? Yeah.
Right. And in this case, it's just largely still Ricky, but sometimes Gretchen does help, or I'm helping, or mostly it was like, the biggest thing about this is it severely reduced the, like, not being able to find all the pieces that you needed to assemble a product or put it together in the box or whatever those things were. That was pretty challenging, and just basically like you had to know the lay of the land very specifically to, like, and it hadn't, you know, if it didn't move that week, we didn't rearrange stuff, which we were constantly doing. But now it's like, I need pedestals. I've got all the stuff in one bin, basically. That's like all the little messy bits.
Nice.
And it's been really nice. Maybe I'll make a video of that.
Yeah, that's cool.
But yeah, mostly just took bigger bins, like wider ones, so that we could take them out of their... It's a growing problem, right? It's like those were all well-organized, more average-sized bins that had like M8s and 5mm dowel pins and stuff. And they were all... You'd have to take all those down and take 10 of these, 12 of these. And now they're put into one larger thing. Which has
been
nice.
Are you printing these bins?
The sub bins, the big ones? Yeah. The outer ones are... No, they're huge. They're like Acro or Quantum brand from Zorro. They're like $15. They're not expensive.
Yeah.
They hang.
Here
right now.
Like backhand.
And then we
little...
just, you know... Yep. And we just print little... He's just picking ones that fit nicely on the actual Gridfinity, you know, standard, and then changing the height to whatever makes sense. And it's really satisfying to, I mean, I probably have some diagnosable thing, but it's one of those like universal design things where whatever my problem is seems to also be good for a lot of other people, that I'm like, I don't know, there's six bins. I don't know where to find all those things quickly. And it frustrates me. So once you like bring it down to like, now there's one, and then the other one is the cold storage on the, you know, we've moved them to the side. It's really satisfying to like, just look at it even.
If I walked into your shop now, you asked me to assemble a dust boot. Is there a documented, do you like document the process at all? Is that bit of it still quite tribal in terms of where to put the magnet and which bit goes in there? And like, have you bothered to do that sort of stuff?
So we've begun, and having Gretchen has been a good, we're kind of turning her, let's say, extra time that's not involved with customers or logistical things into helping us document these things. What do they always say in these books? Like, fire ourselves trying to, like, our specific one, her list of, I'd said a while back, was what happens if Ricky gets hit by a bus. And it's like a whole list of like, how do you use the shredder? How do you use the, all these things. And she's got one that has things for me too, that it's basically this checklist of like all the weird nuanced things. And dust boots, unfortunately, are like our number one. We need Ricky. And he's not against like documenting it. It's just like, I don't know. Do you have these things where it's like, well, we're going to change the, we're going to change it to be better. And so then why would we document this version? Mm-hmm. You know, let's do the next version. And then that's been 2 years.
Yep.
So they're actually taking this time when they're, she's out of the office and I'm in here recording. Every week is the minimum amount of time that we're going to just document things. So they're going through one of those things right now and turning it into something better. But I still like the idea of the little kiosk. I haven't done anything else with that yet. But that's kind of the long-term goal for me, I think, is to have this build, bomb research process guide kiosk that you can scan a card or quickly search or yell at it and get pedestals, and it like shows you
like that. You just yell across the shop.
Well, we do that with our stupid Alexa thing right now. Sometimes needs a name, I guess. Jasper.
Cool. Yeah, John's been reworking some of the dispatch stuff. It's so good having someone else here who's like deep in the clawed hole of improvement.
He's really evolved, huh?
Software development, like, it's awesome. Because, like, for the most part, we tiptoe around each other's projects a little bit. We've got access to the same GitHub, but, like, we tend to ask permission of, like, hey, can I update this thing in your app? Because it's sort of annoying me. And yesterday he was asking me if we can update a bunch of stuff in around the sort of dispatch processes, because he's been covering dispatch on Thursdays quite a bit. And so it's so good to have someone like that who's that enabled and capable to just be doing that process, like going through the all the stages of dispatch and getting orders ready, and then simultaneously like updating the the sheet and the process and what's displayed. And it's like, win-win.
Yeah, that's great.
Real nice.
And that's all going into your, what's that app called? Obsidian kind of thing now?
All those updates are just being made. That's in mission control, like just our job manager, in terms of where that dispatch is happening, like where we're booking freight and printing dispatch sheets and stuff, packing orders and stuff. And then, just raw documentation is being dumped into Obsidian, which I think, a few weeks into Obsidian now, seems to be working reasonably well. The interface is still, a little bit challenging at times, accidentally making new documents instead of when you're trying to search for stuff. And, I did have one win this week with Obsidian when I realized I could make a recently updated index, because there's still so much crap in there that's been migrated through from Notion on even older Airtable stuff as well. And it's a huge job to just go through and work out what's irrelevant and delete it or archive it. I've done some of that with Agent Help already, but I realized this week I could just make a recently updated index that just, on the start here workshop page, it's just got recently updated, and it automatically updates its little table showing, I can see John updated the Fusion Tool Library page in Obsidian yesterday, and I can just click straight to that article. And so just organically that kind of shows, the top 12 results that are probably what you're looking for is probably already on that list. You can just jump straight to it.
Yeah.
Great. So that's been nice. And the whole sync thing, local storage, seems to be working pretty smoothly.
Yeah. Sure right. Yeah.
Now that we're into software, did you see that Airtable is being bought?
No. By whom? By who?
I think I got it. I don't remember where. Something called Bending Spoons, which apparently is
what?
More or less like one of these companies that, buys other companies. And I want to say it's like a private equity, but I don't honestly know. It went public at $18 billion valuation in July. Typically acquires companies that are trading at a decent discount to their private valuations, trims the staff, streamlines products, and tries to make them run profitably. So it sounds like private equity to me. But all the suspicion is... And the interesting conversation about it is like Monday.com and probably Notion and what's the A one? Not Atlassian. The other one, they're all like trying to pivot to be AI companies. And like, as we've found with Airtable, like a bunch of bullshit, like it's not an AI thing at all. It's a database. It always has been that. And they stagnated 7 years ago. But it was bought for $1.4 billion and their last fundraising valuation was $11 billion.
Ooh.
So interesting. But it kind of put the writing on the wall more than anything for me that I think I need to just, I have so many different things I'm using still of Airtable. Aside from, you know, even what we were planning with Airshop, that, I mean, we're taking notes for the podcast right now on Airtable and so many different things that's really overwhelming me, honestly. There's just so many things that you work through your day to day as a couple elder millennials on the internet, and it's like, How do you proceed and not expect to have to do this massive cleanup after yourself constantly? You know, like I feel like I'm going to spend most of my work year anymore. Just fuck, I got to fix Airtable now. That's going away.
Yeah, I have no answers because I'm self-aware of like how much that answer has changed for me just in the time we've been chatting. Like how much software each of us cycled through in the last 4 years. Airtable's been, you know, a core mainstay of that, sure. But
where I keep all of my product development stuff still. Like I don't really have a replacement for that planned at all at this point. So I don't know. Yeah, sorry, I interrupted you.
No, I was just thinking like, and it's only because it's my current obsession, but like I am... fairly in love with MD files and local context management.
We're back, baby.
I was thinking about, you know, the old days of, you know, where every project in ChatGPT like 2 years ago was like basically a clean slate, like pre-sim theory where you could store agent instructions and stuff like, everything you sat down to try and do, you're basically rebuilding context from scratch. Whereas now,
am I crazy?
All of my context management is just is local MD files in folders. And it's just like sorted in projects and, you know, vast amount of documentation covering so many different things. But that's all there, sitting there on my computer, on my server. And I can pick that up and inject it wherever it needs to go. And I feel like that's super valuable to just own that data. And I don't know, you know, maybe I'll be migrating away from that in 6 months as well. But like right now, that feels like the answer.
It definitely, so like back when I started listening to Merlin Mann on what was that called? Podcast I listened to like 600 episodes of Back to Work. It's kind of like the origination of my like how I thought of, you know, productivity and solutions for myself to like be productive, and listening to David Allen, reading David Allen books and stuff like that. And that was always his take. Merlin and people like that I listened to and liked their thinking was to just keep it all in plain text that's not bastardized by the app, right? So that you can move it around easily and have it to yourself and just go back to like I used to use this app called NVAlt, And it was just a way to like, it was basically a very, 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 very simplified Obsidian where it's just on one side, a list of files and the other side, an editor. And that did work for me for quite a while, but that doesn't work though. That doesn't work in a team environment. I think Obsidian very well could for you guys, but like the whole like oversimplified, it's almost like you got to be a person that writes or develops to be able to use that. So I don't know. I don't know how you proceed other than trying to maybe live with that kind of like simplified mindset of like, how can I get in and out of this easily and continue on without having some proprietary layer that's lost to AI or something, you know?
Don't know. A friend who's doing his PhD in sort of AI adjacent design practice sent me like a Mac Studio for sale online last night. This got so 500 gig of integrated RAM or something. It's like, here's your local AI beast. It's like a $30,000 Mac Studio. Like, no thanks, I'm good.
Jeez. No kidding. Yeah. No, I mean, prices are going up with all this stuff. You remember when, like, before this Ramageddon happened, like, you could get a Mac Mini for, like, $500 and not run a server on it, but.
I missed that boat. Kicking myself. I missed that.
Have to trade in a robot for a Mac Mini.
Yeah. Have you been affected by the fires over there?
It's been real smoky here. It's less like visible today, which is kind of creepier. That you guys use the whole AQI system there too? Is it the same? Is that a universal thing?
Don't
think so. Air quality index.
Oh, maybe.
I don't know how overarching that system is, but it's like it's a number of rating, PM 2.5 concentration. So, I mean, it's 122 right now, but it's been closer to 200 and it's been orange skies. And for the most part, we try to keep like the doors shut, but you know, even in the shop, like it's still too high, and I felt, you know, we've had talking to Aaron and stuff, it's like we've had headaches and stuff from it. It's not fun. I don't know, there's nothing really to be done about it other than try to sit, be in a closed room that's or wear a mask all the time. But a weird time again.
You're not so just smoky, you're not in fire zone?
Just smoke. I mean, we have like what happened in Spokane is pretty insane. Like it like hit a big portion of the city, and it's not a small, like a tiny city out in the middle of nowhere. Like it is on the edge of, I don't know, wilderness, I guess, or like a more rocky plateau of Washington. But it's like my in-laws used to live there. It's not a tiny city, and it like has thousands of people wiped out by forest fires or potential arson, seemingly.
Yeah, that's where Eric, my Kitapart's partner, lives and has his shop. He's okay. But yeah, scary stuff. Not good.
Right. And he's up in Spokane?
Yeah, Spokane. I've never known how to say it.
Spokane. I've known.
Yeah.
What else? Went to the big This Summer movie, The Odyssey.
This Summer.
Last night. This Summer. I was trying to find us.
This Summer.
Like, do we not have that as a sound clip? And we don't. So we will.
Yes.
Have you seen? No spoilers. No. I won't spoil anything.
I don't movie. I have no intention of seeing it.
This is the second movie we've seen in theaters since our son was born almost 3 years ago. But it was nice to get out, and we went to an IMAX theater, which I'd never been to the one in town before, which interesting. Like, it was good. I enjoyed it. Just, I don't know what I didn't have much to talk about, I guess, or I thought I didn't. So, well, I saw a movie.
I got out of the house.
And watched a movie and didn't fall asleep.
Yeah, we've got a tiny little cinema in town here. It's a really, I think it's heritage listed. Like, it's so old. It's one of the first cinemas in Australia or something. It's got a tiny little screen and old, uncomfortable seats. My sister went, and she famously hates Christopher Nolan films. So I don't know why she went and endured The Odyssey.
Hate watch.
She went on the weekend and she said the funniest bit was the American sitting in front of her in this tiny little cinema. It was like, when's the screen going to open up? It's like, no, sorry, mate. It's just one little screen. It doesn't open up.
It doesn't get any bigger. Oh, that might be really shocking to me. I appreciated, I mean, it's hard to, I want to see more behind the scenes. I think I'm not much of like a film aficionado by any means, and I don't have any Christopher Nolan appreciation really. Like, I mean, appreciation is not the right word, like fandom.
True.
But I did appreciate the movie, and there's some mysticalness to it, right? Of course, like with the whole Greek god idea, Greek fables. I don't know what to call them.
Mythology. Yeah.
Mythology. And that was done almost exclusively with like in person, real practical effects, which is just kind of wild to think. Like, I definitely caught myself going through the movie. Not to mention they had this absolutely enormous camera with, like, if you've seen these images, and they like tried to make it more soundproof. And so it's like 50% larger than it normally is. And it like records three minutes at a time, and they have to change the film out.
Jeez.
So it just feels like a throwback, or like a just out of this time period, that's a reality still in 2026, that's feasible, and, you know, turns out to be a great, great show in the end.
Yeah, cool. Nice. Good. It is an enormous camera. Gosh. Wild.
What do they call it? The blimp?
Yeah, it's nuts.
Sick. Oh, okay. One more thing. Just in terms of like technology.
Just one more thing. Yeah.
They invented a way, because the blimp was so big, and we were talking about like how if we look this way at each other, right, the whole 180 trick, and you look back and forth, it's too big to film like that, like to have two cameras to do the 180 conversation thing.
Yeah, yeah.
They had to invent lenses, like mirrors, so that they could look at the mirror and see each other in multiple reflections.
Awesome. Yeah. Yeah,
which
wild.
Sounds brutal. But apparently it was useful.
So they're still using two cameras? They're shooting both heads into
one
camera?
I don't know. I'm not sure. Other than that, I saw that they were using this crazy thing. But I guess that's the other part of it that's just kind of mind-blowing to me, that like we haven't miniaturized or made this better, smaller by now. I know that the film is huge, so there's that part. But like the rest of it needs to
point.
Be.
It's the, you know,
it's got
the indulgence of 70mm film. That's why it's they don't want to miniaturize it. It's obscene for a reason. Like, they want all that grain, baby. Yeah. Wild. It's cool.
Oh, there's that's a great shot. Pew, pew. What kind of thumbnails we can make out of this?
Go pack a van and do a Melbourne trip. I'm the delivery driver today.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Go and do some deliveries in the shitty. It'll be fun. As long as my clunker van doesn't break down. We good.
No. Yeah, have fun.
Thanks. Rob. Ring a ding ding. I'll see you next time. Boo.